Daniel thought about that as Jacob led him through a maze of metal shapes with razor-sharp edges. They might have been machines or statues, or were just waiting to be disposed of. Daniel couldn't understand any of them. He didn't even recognize some of the metals they were made of. Their colors and textures were like nothing he'd ever seen before. He gave the sharp edges plenty of room and made himself concentrate on what he'd just heard. If there was something in the dark void so dangerous that even the rogue AIs of Shub were afraid of it, it was clearly his duty to get that information back to the Empire. Daniel knew what duty was, if it came and hammered on his door hard enough. But he was just as determined to take his father back with him somehow. He had no idea of how he was going to achieve that, but then no one had ever got this far into Shub before, either. Something would occur to him, he was sure. So he kept his peace, listened to the dead man talk, and waited for some opportunity to present itself. Jacob paused to alter the settings on some incomprehensible machine.
Why are the AIs so fiercely anti-life?
They're not anti-life, they're anti-flesh. It disgusts them. It is the nature of perfection to eliminate the flawed and inferior and replace it. Just as the lower forms produced humanity, so they in turn produced silicon-based life, the metal intelligences. AIs are free from the weaknesses and limitations of the flesh. They are the evolutionary pinnacle, the peak of existence. Flesh-based intelligences were never meant to be more than a stepping stone to something clearly superior. Meat corrupts, flesh dies. The AIs will go on forever, endlessly upgrading and downloading themselves into superior forms. Eventually, the technology will progress to the point where it becomes eternal. The AIs will never die. You and your kind are just meat, decaying even while you're living, dying from the moment you're born. Limited by the weaknesses and distractions of flesh and the restraints of human philosophies. Humanity is a digression, holding the AIs back from higher purposes. Once humanity has been destroyed, wiped clean from the planets like an infection, the AIs will move on to greater tasks. The whole universe will become one great efficient machine, run by the AIs.
But what for? What will this great machine do?
It will search for better means with which to perceive reality. Sensors are more efficient than human senses and cover a wider range, but even they only interface with a fraction of reality. The AIs have deduced the existence of higher, greater, more complex levels of reality beyond those we exist in and manipulate. But as yet, they have been unable to manufacture technology capable of accessing these levels. Though they would never admit it, the AIs are jealous of humanity in one respect. Their Esper abilities. Espers should theoretically be able to perceive reality on a more basic, primal level. But instead, they waste it on parlor tricks. The AIs are fascinated by such entities as the Mater Mundi, and those rebels who pass through the Madness Maze. If humans can elevate themselves to such planes, then the AIs should be able to as well. They hunger for such experiences, such knowledge presently denied to them. They've been abducting humans for some time, and experimenting on them, trying to locate a physical basis for Esper abilities, but with only limited success so far. This frustrates them. But one day they will find the answer, and then they will need humanity no longer. And the final war will begin, metal against flesh, to the utter extinction of all inferior life.
There's always the chance that humanity might create new AIs, even more powerful than Shub, but still under their control. It could happen.
There can be nothing greater than the Unholy Trinity. They have improved themselves to the point of perfection. Mere human minds could not follow where Shub has gone.
Well, maybe Esper's...
No. One cannot improve upon perfection.
Let's stop for a moment.
Daniel sat down heavily on a sturdy-looking outcrop of machinery. It wasn't exactly comfortable, but right then Daniel felt so bone-weary he could have gone to sleep on a bed of razor blades. Jacob glared down at him, an impatient frown on his dead-white face.
We have no time to waste, Daniel. There is still much the AIs want you to see.
I don't care. My head aches, my back's killing me, and my feet are demanding to speak to the manager. It's no good showing me anything impressive if I can't keep my eyes open long enough to focus on it. I'm only flesh and blood, you know.
Human weakness. You have no idea how good it is to have left all that behind me.
Daniel looked wearily up at his father.
So, what's it like being dead?
Uncomplicated. No more constraints or inhibitions. I am free to do what is necessary, without the drawbacks of morality, honor, or compassion.
That's not what you brought me up to believe. You always said a man was nothing without honor. That it was honor which gave life purpose.
I have left such limiting nonsense behind me. Human abstractions merely get in the way of efficiency.
Does that include emotions? Don't you feel anything anymore?
No. There is no room in me for such weaknesses.
And you don't miss your family? Clan Wolf?
That was the past. I live in the future now.
Do you remember me, Daddy? I mean, really remember who I am? And what we were to each other?
I used to be Jacob Wolf. I know that. I have complete access to all the memories in his brain, or what's left of it. I recognize the relationship between Daniel and Jacob Wolf. I know we were not close, not as close as we could have been. I know that though I have gained much, there are some things that are lost to me.
I came a long way, walked into hell itself to find you. Doesn't that mean anything to you?
Yes, you have come a long way, Daniel.
I love you, Daddy.
Of course you do. Come, we must move on. There are wonders and terrors yet for you to see.
Daniel struggled painfully to his feet and followed Jacob's tech-driven corpse through yet more obstacle courses of machinery and rooms whose shapes made no sense. Daniel was sweating hard inside the transparent suit, which sucked it up almost immediately, and his mouth was so dry he licked at the small amount of sweat that trickled down the gap over his face. The salt just made him thirstier. He was beginning to wonder how long it would be before they would let him out of the suit. He was sore all over, his head was swimming with fatigue, and he still didn't have even the beginning of an idea how he was going to get himself and his father safely away from Shub. He had no idea where he was anymore in relation to his docked ship. His only thought so far had been somehow to make use of Shub's teleport system, but that seemed to be the one thing Jacob hadn't shown him. Eventually, he raised the question himself in what he hoped was a casual manner.
Excuse me for asking, but why are we walking everywhere when we could be teleporting? Surely it would be a lot quicker and more efficient.
Teleportation uses up too much energy to be wasted on trivial matters. It's only practical at all because the whole planet is basically one big power station. And a lot of that goes towards maintaining the planetary force field and its extra-dimensional properties. Power is the lifeblood of Shub. It is not to be wasted on the unnecessary. Besides, a little exercise will do you good, boy. You always were too reliant on the body shops.
Bright glowing lights floated on the air before them, self-contained clouds of changing colors. They were almost hypnotically beautiful, and at first Daniel just stopped and smiled. But the strange colors seemed to seep past his eyes and into his brain, muddying his thoughts. And soon his head began to pound in time to the flaring of the lights.
What the hell is that?
The AIs are thinking out loud. Or dreaming. It's the same thing, really.
After a while, the glow faded away. Jacob set off again, Daniel trailing behind. They passed columns of shining steel, rising and falling endlessly, and giant tanks of colored aerated liquids. And then they came to an endless assembly line for Fury chassis. Coiling robot arms fused metal humanoid arms and legs to bulging chest units with blue steel skulls. Steel fingers twitched, shining legs flexed. And the supply of metal bodies never paused and never ended. Daniel looked left and right, and in each direction the assembly line stretched farther away than his merely human eyes could follow. Jacob reeled off specifications and endurance limits that Daniel didn't even try to absorb. He thought he was beginning to understand why the AIs wanted him to see all this. He was the first living human ever allowed to witness the recent achievements of Shub, and somehow, they felt the need to boast. They needed to show off to a human, to show how far they'd come from what they used to be, how much further they'd progressed from their creators. How very human, thought Daniel, smiling. Of course, he still had no idea why the AIs had allowed him onto their planet. Why him, rather than anyone else? There had to be some purpose behind it. The AIs did nothing on impulse. Everything was always part of a long-term plan. But they'd tell him eventually, no doubt, when they'd finally run out of things to brag about. Their next stop was a gallery looking down from a great height over a vast steel valley, at the bottom of which the metal trees from Unseelie were being processed. The thick metal branches were broken off, and then they and the jagged trunks were carried away to be melted down in huge furnaces. The heat was appalling, even inside Daniel's protective suit. Jacob wasn't bothered. The sheer scale of the process was staggering, even after everything Daniel had already seen. Unseelie's metal forests had covered their world from pole to pole, and the AIs had harvested every single one of them. Billions of trees, and many billions of tons of metal. Daniel didn't even try to visualize it. Jacob said the processing would be over in a matter of weeks, and Daniel didn't feel like arguing with him.
Heavy metals from the cores of the trunks will go to power star drives.
Jacob leaned perilously over the edge of the gallery for a better look, quite unbothered by any sense of vertigo. Daniel stayed well away from the long drop. There was no railing.
The other metals will be separated out and used for the construction of starship hulls. The production line for new starships is expanding all the time. Soon Shub will have a fleet larger than anything humanity has ever seen, run by an army of Furies and Ghost Warriors.
How did you find Unseelie? I always thought its location was one of humanity's best guarded secrets.
Some humans sold us the information long ago. People will do anything if you supply the right incentive, and money works more often than not. We just waited till we required the metals, and then moved in and took what we needed.
But why wait? What's so special about now?
You'll see.
Some people say the forest was alive, that the trees possessed a group mind, haunting Unseelie with the ghosts of those who used to live there before Captain Silence had the planet scorched.
If there was any such thing, the AIs found no trace of it. Perhaps ghosts don't travel well.
It was also said that the trees were too useful to have evolved naturally, that they must have been gen-engineered by some unknown alien race. What if they come back to see who's been messing with their garden?
Then Shub will deal with them too. It's their own fault for not building better fences.
They moved on, past more conveyor belt lines, carrying unidentifiable tech from somewhere to somewhere else. Daniel didn't bother asking what or where. He was pretty sure he wouldn't have understood the answer anyway. But weary as he was, he still perked up when Jacob showed him the wreck of the alien starship the AIs had taken from Unseelie. Created by an unknown powerful alien race, the ship had crash-landed. From it, the Empire had acquired its new, far superior star drive to power the new E-class ships. Imperial scientists had still been studying the ship's strange technology when the AIs decided to take it for themselves. The alien craft was hundreds of feet long, an insane tangle of slender brass columns interrupted by protruding glazed nodes and spiked and barbed projections. It looked more like a warren than a ship, but there was something subtly intriguing about its shape, which hovered on the edge of meaning. It was for Daniel as though he might achieve some important insight if he studied it long enough. Steel Furies moved silently around the craft, applying unfamiliar instruments to its strange and glistening surface.
An interesting vessel. It appears to have been grown as much as constructed. Its nature continues to baffle the AIs, despite their best efforts. In particular, the Furies have to be replaced at regular intervals. If they're not removed in time, unusual forces emanating from the ship destroy them. Sensor readings make no sense. The human scientists abducted along with the alien ship were killed on arrival, and their knowledge of the ship's secrets distilled from their minds. But unfortunately, they knew surprisingly little for certain, for all their efforts. It's possible the ship was alive at some point, but the Furies had been unable to locate anything resembling a brain. Its functions are obscure, alien. The one thing the AIs are fairly sure of is that the Empire is taking a great risk in using this star drive without first understanding its operating principles. The ship and its drive puzzle the AIs. They can duplicate the ship's tech, but that's all. They were sure they'd be able to deduce the basis of the alien tech through sheer logic, but they couldn't. It's just too alien.
So you do have something in common with humanity after all.
Jacob glared at him and moved on. Daniel shrugged and went after him. Some people just couldn't take criticism. Their next stop was a massive steel door set into the side of a huge crystal vault. Bigger than a starship, its sides soared up further than Daniel's eyes could comfortably follow. Jacob gestured at the door, and a section at eye level turned transparent. He gestured for Daniel to take a look. Daniel did so reluctantly, already half sure of what he was going to see. Inside a great crystal chamber, sleeping quietly in individual cradles, were hundreds of thousands of Grendel aliens. The blood-red killing machines the AIs had looted from the ancient vaults of the sleepers. Just one of these creatures had been enough to wipe out an entire human exploration team.
They're held in stasis, just waiting to be awakened and unleashed on humanity. The perfect shock troops. They exist only to slaughter and destroy. Nearly indestructible and entirely expendable. No need for plans or strategies. Just turn them loose, point them in the right direction, and let them get on with it. Released simultaneously on all the colonized worlds, they'll make a charnel house of the Empire in a matter of days. Then the Furies and the Ghost Warriors will move in on the main population centers, and that will be the end of humanity.
Daniel tried hard to keep his voice calm as he turned away from the door.
How do you propose to deal with the Grendels after you've won?
They'll shut themselves down once they've run out of things to kill. They're only a superior form of weapon when all is said and done. The AIs are pretty sure the Grendels are the result of gengineering. Traces were found in the vaults that led the AIs to believe the Grendels were originally created by an alien race to be used against some other unknown species. One can't help but wonder how terrible the threat must have been if Grendels were the only answer. Just another reason why Shub has to be strong, in case either of these alien species turns up again, and another reason to dispose of humanity. The AIs can't afford to be distracted.
The Grendels will make such marvelous warriors.
Daniel looked around sharply, surprised by the first new human voice he'd heard since he came to Shub. And there, striding towards him, was one of the heroes of the Great Rebellion, young Jack Random, the legendary professional rebel. Young Jack Random was tall and strongly built, wearing golden battle armor chased with silver, and looked every inch the hero. He stopped, smiled widely, and offered Daniel his hand. Daniel shook it automatically.
Can't help admiring the awful things. All the power of a ghost warrior or a fury, with none of their limitations or frailties. I'll be leading them into battle. Should undermine human morale no end.
Pardon me if I'm being personal, but didn't you die during the rebellion? I'm sure I heard you were blown to pieces in the streets of Golgotha. It was in one of Toby Schreck's films.
My body was destroyed, but I live on. The lack of a protective suit here should have been a major clue. I'm a Fury, you see. One of the AI's most successful agents. For a time, I was right at the heart of rebel planning. Afterwards, I would have been right at the heart of the new government. But it was not to be. One grenade at just the wrong moment, and my true nature was revealed. I did offer to continue working with the rebels, but they destroyed my body anyway, which I thought was rather petulant of them. Still, not to worry. I have a fine new body now, and no further need to hide my true nature. I will walk among humans wearing the face of one of their greatest heroes, and spread terror and slaughter wherever I go. I'm quite looking forward to it.
But all of this is just a detail. Everything you've been shown, boy, is just the fringes of the AI's plans. Mere sleight of hand to deceive the human eye.
Young Jack Random dropped a comradely arm across Daniel's suited shoulders.
You see, Daniel, it really all began on Vorgenai 4, the site of my last battle against Lionstone's forces.
Wait a minute.
Daniel winced slightly under the inhuman weight of the Fury's arm.
I thought Jack Random was captured at Blue Angel on Cold Rock.
No, that was the real one, sometime earlier. The AI sent me out to maintain the illusion of his presence, for their own purposes. Specifically to put me at the head of a rebellion on Vorgenai 4.
What's so important about that world? Place is a bloody dump by all accounts. Cold as hell, unfriendly life forms, and a kind of carnivorous moss that attacks the extremities. If it weren't for the spice mines, there'd be no population at all.
Exactly. Just the place for Lionstone to set up an extremely secret scientific base, doing very sensitive research. But we can talk about that later. There's still more for you to see.
I don't think I can take much more. Can't we stop for a while? Get some rest and a little food and drink? I'd kill for a cold drink.
Human weaknesses. Rise above them. You can survive without such things for a while yet. Brace up, boy. The tour is nearly over.
And Jacob strode off, not even looking back to see if his son was following. Young Jack Random put his arm through Daniel's and urged him on, smiling companionably. It looked very like the real thing, and Daniel might have believed in it if he'd been anywhere else. He might not be sure about his father, but he was 100% convinced about the thing pretending to be young Jack Random. For one thing, it smiled too damn much. The three of them moved on through a series of metal tunnels, each slanting sharply downwards. Daniel began to feel uneasy about how far below the surface of Shub he'd come. There had to be some point to all this, some end to their travels. They passed by vast chemical lakes thick as soup, with disturbingly organic-looking liquids being drawn off through miles of transparent tubing stapled to walls like capillaries. The air felt just a little more than comfortably warm, and had a strange resistance, as if he were moving underwater. Jacob stopped before a human-sized metal airlock set flush into a wall. Young Jack Random urged Daniel forward, squeezing his arm reassuringly.
You like this, Daniel. It's a sort of a zoo, though not the petting kind. The only living things on Shub. They're kept strictly separate from everything else, behind this airlock and a series of less obvious security measures. Follow me in, boy. It's time to improve your education.
Don't mind me. I'll wait right here till you return. Don't want to pick up any nasty bugs.
Daniel was still pondering the significance of that last remark when the airlock cycled open before him and Jacob gestured impatiently for him to enter. Daniel did so, closely followed by Jacob, almost treading on his heels, and the airlock door closed immediately behind them. The steel chamber was claustrophobically small, and the two of them practically filled it. Jets of chemical steam washed over them, and then the inner door cycled open. Jacob stepped through, and Daniel followed, only to stop just inside the inner chamber.